The headlines. Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says the enemies failed in their plots to cause disruption in the country because of miscalculations about the recent developments. Palestinians hold the funeral of a 41-year-old man who was killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. And French oil workers' unions join other major trade unions in calling for strikes in response to the government's pension reform plan. This is news. It's good to have you with us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the enemies made miscalculations when hatching plots to fuel the recent riots and to create disruption in the country. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the enemies tapped into all of their available resources to plunge the country into chaos and turmoil. He said that they cashed in on people's livelihood issue as the country's economic situation was not very good. The leader added, among other techniques the enemies employed to stoke unrest were to sneak espionage teams into Iran to promote Iranophobia worldwide through various propaganda ploys and incite ethnic, religious, political, and even personal sentiments. However, Ayatollah Khamenei noted that they failed to pull it off, despite all of their schemes, because of their miscalculations and Iran's firm resolve. Ayatollah Khamenei made the comments in a meeting with eulogists. Iranian university students and political activists gathered in front of the French embassy in Tehran to once again denounce a French magazine's insult to Muslim sanctities and Iran's religious and national values. Our correspondent, Gisu Misha Ahmadi, tells us more.
The street in front of the French embassy in Tehran once again became the scene of angry protests. This time, a group of Iranian activists and university students gathered to denounce the satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo's insulting cartoons affronting Iran's highest religious and political figures. The protesters chanted slogans condemning the Paris-based publication. They call on France not to allow publishing insults at the sanctities of Muslims under the guise of freedom of expression. This young lady did not mince her words condemning Charlie Hebdo and its insults, a stance echoed by every single protester.
We are here on behalf of all Muslim students in response to the insulting cartoons published by the Charlie Hebdo magazine. We are here to express our anger.
Our red lines have been crossed. We will by no means tolerate such acts, and we are here to make this very clear.
We should boycott all French products to teach them a lesson. They should not allow themselves to insult our values.
This rally comes after Iran's foreign ministry summoned the French ambassador to Tehran to object the insulting act. The protesters questioned the West's so-called freedom of speech and free media's absolute values. This university student says even the most vociferous free speech advocates agreed that the right to freedom of expression is not absolute and requires certain considerations, especially when it tends to incite hatred and offend religious values.
Those who are taking part in this demonstration say it is not the first time that Charlie Hebdo has taken on this kind of adventurism. It seems that the magazine feeds on hatred and hostility and crosses the red line of decency every time. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Palestinians have held the funeral of 41-year-old Samir Aouni Harbi Aslan, who was killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. Samir was shot dead during an overnight raid in the Qalandia refugee camp on Thursday. The resistance movement Hamas has said war on Tel Aviv regime will continue until the liberation of all Palestinian lands. The killing comes just one day after an Israeli settler fatally shot a 19-year-old Palestinian near the city of Al-Khalil, also known as Hebron. Also on Wednesday, Israeli troops shot another young Palestinian man in the head during a raid on the Balata refugee camp. The man later succumbed to his injuries. Our correspondent Mona Kandil says the Israeli raid of the Qalandia refugee camp in the occupied West Bank is yet another act of violence against Palestinians.
This time, Israeli forces have raided Qalandia refugee camp between Al-Quds and Ramallah to conduct arrests among Palestinians as usual. During this operation, Israeli forces raided the narrow streets of Colombia refugee camp and arrested from Colombia 12 Palestinians, including the son of this Palestinian martyr, 17-year-old Ramzi Aslan. The Israelis wanted to arrest him, and here his father tried to prevent the Israeli soldiers from brutally taking his son and from beating him. However, Israeli forces opened fire at the father, Samir Aslan, and they stripped him from his clothes and left him on the ground. He was bleeding. A number of soldiers were around him. And it was according to the footage that we have received, the Israeli soldiers were surrounding Aslan and left him bleeding until he succumbed to his injuries. Today, 18 Palestinians were arrested by the Israeli forces. As I have mentioned, a dozen of them were arrested in the Colombia refugee camp, and the remaining were arrested in the Dahesh refugee camp in Bethlehem. In addition to one Palestinian was detained by the Israeli forces during a raid to Qalqilia, northern the occupied West Bank.
Doctors and medical experts in Yemen believe that Saudi Arabia and its coalition forces are using biological weapons, which are believed to be the reason for the increased cancer and birth defect cases in Yemen. Yusuf Mowry has the special story.
Sana is dying. She was born just a few days ago, but because of a rare birth malformation, doctors believe she only has a few days to live. Sana is one of the thousands of Yemeni babies facing a similar fate. Here in the Sab'een Hospital in the Yemeni capital, doctors say they have been receiving birth defect cases at an alarming rate since 2015. That's when the Saudi-led coalition launched its war on Yemen. Doctors here are convinced that biological weapons were employed by the Saudis.
We've received many birth defect cases throughout the years. However, this is the first time we received a case like this. She does not have the bottom limbs or kidneys or even a urinary tract or liver. She's missing all of her bottom half organs. Malformation cases have risen significantly since 2015. We believe the rise in these cases is due to the hazardous poisons from the weapons being used in the war.
Cancer cases are also on the rise. The spokesperson for Yemen's Ministry of Health says that the data and statistics recorded since the war started indicate that biological weapons used by the Saudi-led coalition are the main cause of the steady increase in cancer and birth defects.
These cases are rising in the areas that were targeted by illegal weapons in a number of provinces in Yemen, which has led to a significant increase of various kinds of cancer cases and also birth defects and miscarriages. It was never like this prior to the war.
We visited the registration office at Yemen's only oncology center. It was packed with people pushing their way to register for cancer treatment.
I am here to register for medication. I have oral cancer.
I have just received another case. The person who just registered is from Eb and has liver cancer.
According to Yemen's Ministry of Health, the number of cancer patients increased by more than 50% since the war was launched in 2015. The Yemeni Ministry of Health says it will form a committee to officially investigate the main cause for the increase in birth defects and cancer cases in the areas that have been hit the most by the Saudi airstrikes. Even if it's evident that prohibited weapons were utilized by Saudi Arabia and its coalition forces, it is unlikely they will face prosecution, since most of the weapons used in the war are supplied by the American and British governments.
Doctors and medical experts say the increase in cancer and birth defect cases is rooted in the eight-year Saudi-led war that has polluted Yemen's air, water, and food. They blame the Saudi-led coalition's use of prohibited weapons such as biological weapons, toxic gases, and cluster bombs. Yusuf Mowry, Sana'a.
France's President Emmanuel Macron says that he does not intend to ask for forgiveness over his country's colonization of Algeria and its role in the War of Independence. Macron says it's irrelevant to ask for forgiveness, and it will break all bonds between the two countries. Algeria, a former French colony, gained independence in 1962 after an eight-year war that claimed hundreds of thousands of Algerian lives. The war, which included executions and acts of torture against the Algerian nationalists, remains a highly sensitive subject in France. In 2017, Macron, a presidential candidate at the time, described France's 100-year colonization of Algeria as a crime against humanity, raising hopes that he will offer apologies to Algeria. But he has so far refrained from an official apology for France's colonial past. French oil workers' unions have called for strikes against President Emmanuel Macron's pension reform plan. A senior official representing the CGT Union Federation says the walkouts are planned for January 19 and 26, as well as February 6. The industrial actions, he said, would shut down refineries, reduce output and deliveries. Trade unions had warned about a tense period ahead if the government does not heed their calls. They are against the government's proposal to raise the legal retirement age by 2 years to 64. They're also opposed to faster increases in the minimum number of years of contributions required to receive full pensions. The announcement follows Wednesday's calls for walkouts in the transport sector. France witnessed several protests last year against the reforms made by Macron.
French trade unions call for strikes and protests over President Emmanuel Macron's pension reforms. The strikes are set to be held on January 19th. It's not yet clear how many people will join the strikes and which services will be affected. It will be the first time in 12 years since the last pension changes that all of France's unions are united. The head of the more moderate CFDT, Laurent Berger, has called the reform one of the most brutal of the last 30 years. Opinion polls show that around two-thirds of French people oppose the proposed reforms. The socialists, the hard-left France Unbowed, and far-right National Rally were quick to say they would oppose the reform. Some ruling party lawmakers have spoken privately of their concern about the protests, while one of the allies of President Macron has warned that the government has not explained itself sufficiently. The calls for pension reforms comes amid high inflation and with the country still recovering from the COVID-19 pandemic.
The French government has decided to raise the legal retirement age from 62 to 64 by 2030 in a major reform to the pension system. That sets the stage for a bitter fight and weeks of disruption nationwide. Opinion polls show around two-thirds of the French people oppose raising the retirement age.
The government intends to hike the retirement age to 64 from the current 62 and streamline the pension system under changes even some supporters view as risky and likely to provoke backlash. French Prime Minister Elisabeth Borne said that doing nothing about the projected deficits for the pension system would be irresponsible. French officials say the country has one of the lowest retirement ages in the industrialized world and spends more than most other countries on pensions at nearly 14% of the economic output. In practice, according to the government's proposal, the age at which one can retire and get a pension in France will be raised gradually by 3 months per year starting this September, reaching 63 years and 3 months in 2027 and the target age of 64 in 2030.
People in France feel that work is tough and many people cannot stay at work until the retirement age. That's why people fear for themselves to see this retirement age to be postponed.
And despite pledges by government officials to raise the minimum pension to nearly 1,200 euros a month, opponents say the reform is unfair because it will disproportionately affect unskilled workers who started their careers early, sometimes in their teens. Analysts believe the projected savings of 20 billion euros a year by 2030 will weigh down entirely on the poorest. Overhauling the pension system was a central pillar of Macron's reformist agenda when he entered the Élysée Palace in 2017.
the government risks a repeat of spontaneous protests in 2018 when people wearing yellow safety jackets began blockading roads, sparking what became known as the Yellow Vest Revolt.
Fighting rages on in the flashpoint town of Soledar in eastern Ukraine's Donetsk region, as Kiev says its forces are battling to keep control of the town.
The fiercest and heaviest fighting continues today in the area of Soledar in the Bakhmut region. Despite the difficult situation, Ukrainian soldiers are fighting fiercely. The enemy, trying unsuccessfully to break through our defense and capture Soledar, is suffering heavy losses.
The Ukrainian Deputy Defense Minister and said that Russia had increased the number of units in Ukraine to 280 from 250 in the past week to boost the defensive clout. On Wednesday, Russia said that its forces were making advances around the salt mining town of Soledar. Russian Defense Ministry said its troops had surrounded the town from the north and south while carrying out airstrikes targeting Ukrainian positions. Ukrainian authorities claimed that the area is still out of the reach of Russian forces. Both sides have admitted to heavy losses during their fight for Soledar and the nearby town of Bakhmut. And that is for this additional World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
In the limelight.
The World Bank has predicted that the world's economy will face a sharp decline in 2023 due to soaring inflation and soaring interest rates. We take a look at some of the world media and press's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The Reuters news agency has covered this story and tells us more. The World Bank slashed its 2023 growth forecast on Tuesday, 10th of December, to levels teetering on the brink of recession for many countries as the impact of central bank interest rate hikes intensifies. Russia's special operation in Ukraine continues, and the world's major economies' engines sputter. The development lender said it now expected global gross domestic product growth of 1.7% in 2023, the slowest pace outside the 2009 and 2020 recessions in nearly three decades. In its previous Global Economic Prospects report, in June of 2022, the World Bank had forecast 2023 global growth at 3%. The bank said major slowdowns in advanced economies, including sharp cuts to its forecast to 0.5% for both the United States and the Eurozone, could foreshadow a new global recession less than 3 years after the last one. The World Bank said in a statement accompanying the report, given fragile economic conditions, any new adverse development, such as higher-than-expected inflation, abrupt rises in interest rates to contain it, a resurgence of the COVID-19 pandemic, or escalating geopolitical tensions could push the global economy into recession. The World Bank said the bleak outlook will be especially hard on emerging markets and developing economies as they struggle with heavy debt burdens, weak currencies and income growth, and slowing business investment that is now forecast at a 3.5% annual growth rate over the next 2 years, less than half the pace of the past two decades. World Bank President David Malpass said in a statement, Weakness in growth and business investment will compound already devastating reversals in education, health, poverty and infrastructure, and increasing demands from climate change. The World Bank report said China's economic growth in 2022 slumped to 2.7%, its second slowest pace since the mid-1970s. After 2020, as zero COVID restrictions, property market turmoil and drought hit consumption in China. Production and investments were also lower. It predicted a rebound to 4.3% for 2023, but that is 0.9 percentage point below the June forecast due to the severity of the COVID disruptions and weakening external demand. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story and tells us more. In its half-yearly health check, the Washington-based World Bank said it had cut its 2023 growth forecast from 2.9% to 1.7% after the risks it identified 6 months ago all materialized. The World Bank's Global Economic Prospects report said the tougher-than-anticipated anti-inflationary measures, persistently high energy prices, and continued lockdowns in China had led to a much weaker outlook for this year than it had expected last summer. Almost every advanced nation and nearly 70% of emerging and developing nations have had their economic growth forecasts cut. The World Bank's mission is to reduce poverty, and its president, David Malpass, said the deterioration in the global economic outlook meant the crisis facing development was intensifying. David Malpass said, emerging and developing countries are facing a multi-year period of slow growth, driven by heavy debt burdens and weak investment, as global capital is absorbed by advanced economies faced with extremely high government debt levels and rising interest rates. The World Bank president, David Malpass, added, the deterioration is broad-based. In virtually all regions of the world, per capita income growth will be slower than it was during the decade before COVID-19. The setback to global prosperity will likely persist. The World Bank said growth in the more prosperous advanced economies is projected to slow from 2.5% in 2022 to just 0.5 percentage point in 2023, adding that in the past 2 decades, slowdowns on a similar scale had resulted in global recession. Excluding China, growth in emerging market and developing economies is expected to decelerate from 3.8% in 2022 to 2.7% in 2023. The World Bank said in sub-Saharan Africa, which accounts for about 60% of the world's extremely poor, growth in per capita income over 2023-2024 is expected to average just 1.2%, a rate that could cause poverty rates to rise, not fall. In fragile and conflict-affected countries, per capita incomes are expected to decline by 2024. World Bank President David Malpass said investment growth in emerging market and developing economies was predicted to be 3.5% a year between 2022 and 2024, half the average rate increase seen in the previous 2 decades. He added, much-needed capital was being diverted to richer countries. The English website of Al Jazeera Television Network has also covered the same story. The head of the International Monetary Fund, IMF, warned this year will be tougher than 2022 for most of the global economy as the United States, the European Union and China see slowing economic growth. The International Monetary Fund's managing director, Kristalina Georgieva, said 2023 will be a tough year with one-third of the world's economies expected to be in recession. Georgieva said during the appearance of the CBS program Face the Nation, She said because the three big economies, the United States, the European Union and China, are all slowing down simultaneously. The remarks come after the International Monetary Fund back in October cut its growth forecast to 2.7%, down from 2.9% forecast in July, amid headwinds including the war in Ukraine and sharply rising interest rates. IMF Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva said China, the world's second largest economy, is likely to grow at or below global growth for the first time in the past 40 years, as COVID-19 cases surge following the dismantling of its zero-COVID policy. Georgieva said she expected China's economic growth to improve towards the end of the year, but there are concerns about its longer-term trajectory. Meanwhile, economists said the lingering energy crisis is expected to cause further recession in the Eurozone this year. Economists said prices in the region will rise by an average of over 6%, and unemployment rate will increase from the current 6.5% to 7.1% by the end of 2023. High inflation and energy shortages will lead to a further decline in production and worsen the situation in the labour market. Subsequently, by the end of the year, the Eurozone economy will shrink by 0.01%. Chiara Zangarelli, an economist at Morgan Stanley, said, "Gas markets in Europe remain a key risk. Additional supply disruptions or a particularly cold winter could lead to renewed tensions and prices rising again, forcing another round of adaptation and demand destruction."
Hidden Files.
When you're limited from employment, education, participating in the society, and seen as a second-class citizen in every way, what do you do? Imagine you're part of the majority in your own country, and yet you're prohibited from being employed in top positions. What if you can't get accepted into the university despite being a top student? You're not allowed to serve in most political offices. And on top of this, you're not allowed to vocalize your oppression. And those who have are either in prison or have fled the country or have been killed. Welcome to Bahrain, the country where the demographics are being changed to oppress the Shia majority. A country where if you talk about the ruling family, you could lose your own citizenship, even though you are from this land. Hello, I'm Marzieh Hashimi, and this is Hidden Files. Today we will take a look at Bahrain, a country which is boiling over with oppression. While the king wants to show the world that the country is modern and democratic, and by the way, he's throwing an election to prove his point. Stay with me as we take a look at the tiny but important Persian Gulf nation of Bahrain. Since the brutal crackdown in 2011, the regime has kept a very heavy-handed grip on this island nation. The oppression is in all sectors of the society. There's a special permit that people must have in order to really function in the society, meaning for jobs, schools, organizations, even bank accounts, etc. Those who participated in the demonstrations are not given these certificates or permits for them to get employment. There is no independent media allowed, and independent human rights organizations have been banned. And those who have tried to report on the human rights situation in Bahrain are in jail. They include Abdulhadi Al-Khawaja, founder of the Bahrain Center for Human Rights, and others who are serving life sentences. Well, in the midst of this crackdown, King Hamad bin Isa Al Khalifa wants to represent the country as being progressive. He's holding elections to select 40 members of the Council of Representatives to be held on November 12th. What he fails to mention is that many former parliamentarians are currently in jail or in exile and have had their citizenship taken away by the king, and that the majority of Bahrainis boycott elections, which they say are not representative and just a farce to have a pretense of democracy and a facade to cover the complete oppression of a nation. Well, let me welcome our first guest to help us take a closer look at just what is taking place in Bahrain.
Dr. Ibrahim El-Aradi graduated from medical school in 2005 and returned to work in Bahrain. He treated many injured people during the revolt. He had to leave Bahrain in April 2011. He has worked in Europe and Lebanon as a doctor and is currently in England. He is the director of the Political Bureau of the February 14 Coalition.
Thanks so much for joining us here at Hidden Files, Dr. Ibrahim Al-Aradi. Well, let's start off with, what is life really like in Bahrain today?
Bahrain cannot say your idea. You cannot say anything for the life, for example. You cannot criticize the government. You cannot say no for the regime. You have to stay just poor. Even your religions, prayers, Aza, anything, Ashura, Al-Khalifa, everything every time, every day, every seasons. So they doesn't want Shia, especially Shia, to have such level, like any level at the government or the country. They bring a new people in Bahrain. They give them our nationality, and they talks from us the citizenships. So nobody allowed to speak normally in Bahrain, like to say what is in his mind. We are not allowed to criticize anything in the country. Just when Al-Khalifa wants us just to live, like, sorry to say that, even worse than animals in Bahrain. So there's no freedom in Bahrain. We have one of the worst dictator regimes in the world is in Bahrain, and the head of these regimes is Hamad Al-Khalifa, who destroyed more than 35 mosques in Bahrain.
Well, why has the regime been revoking the citizenship of some that you just talked about while giving citizenship to foreigners?
To change the demographic of Bahrain, because more than 80% of population in Bahrain, they are Muslim Shia. So they want to change. This the plan was from 25 years to change this demographic in order to make Shia Bahrain minority.
Well, the latest revolt started back in 2010, but still hasn't been successful. What is hindering its success?
Bahrain's people, they are victims of Al-Khalifa regime. We are victims. So we are under pressure for decades. And Al-Khalifa, they want from us just to not do anything in their life. So the aim that Al-Khalifa, they saw that every 10 years there is a demonstration in Bahrain, every 10 years, 10 or 15 years. But the demonstration in February 2011 was the majors, because Sunni and Shia were involved in this demonstration against this regime. Okay, some they want a new government, and other they want the regime to fall down. So they are their idea. But all of us were agree as Bahraini, Sunni and Shia, that regime is against the future of Bahrain. So about the normalization, and we are right now. All the world discovered that we are right now, because Al-Khalifa, they go to the normalization with Israel, which we didn't want. They make like fake elections, or which is not presented Bahrainis real. So all the parties in Bahrain, all the powers, for instance, Sheikh Ali Salman, Mohammed Abdul Wahab, Ustad Hassan Mshami all day in the jail. By the way, today is the birthday of Sheikh Ali Salman, 57 years old, which he sentenced for 35 years. That those issues make Al Khalifa worry that maybe the Shia in Monday, maybe they will have the power. I remember that, and I was kids in that time in 1985, which some people in Bahrain, some soldiers, Shia, Al Khalifa, they kicked them out and they put them in the jail because they say like we have like contact with Iran, with revolution in Iran. So all the problems, Al Khalifa, they say if it is from Iran, but actually, if you see the situation in Bahrain, people are poor. They see our villages, our cities, really are poor. Even the common economic of countries grow, but all those money, if I call it the public treasury, it's just that the money spent for Hamad and his son, prime minister, and other sons, and just the family.
Well, you just talked about Parliament, and we know that there are elections coming up this month. What is your assessment of these elections?
Yeah, there is now a popular boycott for this election. We are showing that we want a new constitution, like real constitution, like legal constitution, which represent the original Bahrainese people, not that one which was written by Hamad's arm only, which is against the people. So about that election, regime used this election just for view to international propaganda for the international community. See, for especially for people and for the government in London and the United States. See, Bahrain is a democratic country. There is election, free election. And at the same time, doesn't allow that regime people from UN anyway to visit the prison in Bahrain, the prisoner, to see the situation. Just Al Khalifa used that media because we don't have all the media in Bahrain is Al Khalifa by it, is under Al Khalifa influence. That election is not legal because if you will say the leaders which are present in the jail in Bahrain, so they are presented the majority of Bahrain. And Hamad, he knows that.
Well, what does it mean for you when the regime has taken away your citizenship?
You know, of course, it's unfair. I am a medical doctor. I work as a doctor in Bahrain. I just spoke. I saw the injuries, the dead people, murders from my eyes at the ground. I rescued many injuries. So Al Khalifa, they want to punish me. Actually, I was in Lebanon that time. I saw on Al Arabiya TV breaking news that Al Khalifa took citizenship from me, from myself, and my others, the Bahrainis. So it is not easy. But, you know, the connect between me and Bahrain, not just this red passport, this route. Al Khalifa, they are not Bahrainis. They invade Bahrain 2 centuries or 200 years. It is not easy, but in the same time, you know that I am Bahrainis. My father is Bahraini. Grandfather are Bahrainis. So if you took from my citizenship, it's not me that I'm not Bahraini. So he treating us now just like this. If you say, if I don't like your idea, I will take your citizenship. More than 500 or 600 people without this citizenship. But practically, there is thousands of people because I simply you go to the airport, you want to go to Al Arba'in, to Iraq, you are not allowed. You want to visit Imam Rida in Iran, you are not allowed. There is Geneva conference or for human rights, you are not allowed to go there. So practically people without citizenship. So that is situations, you know, and I hope that I ask many time that regime, the media, give me one reason why you took from me my citizenship. I will agree with you. One reason. Okay, I'm not criminal. I am just doctor in politics. Did you take my citizenship because I'm a doctor, I rescue people, in Bahrain. So that's the situation for the other. And this is, see now, our kids, they're stateless. There's a new generation without citizenship. And this is that view, the world knows that view. But the problem that Al-Khalifa are continue to do this thing. Just they want to see that. See, you demonstrate in 2011, you're not allowed to be Bahraini. That's the message from Al-Khalifa. They want us to be like Habib, like just to say, oh, what he wants. But actually, that steps won't help him, you know, because people of Bahrain, generation after generation, they are more aggressive against this regime.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Very sad situation in Bahrain. Thank you so much for being with us here, Dr. Al-Aradi. It is interesting how King Hamad has tried to get various international entities on board with his modernization disguise. Even the Pope will be visiting Bahrain in November. He and others have been invited by the Bahraini royal family to participate in a conference themed Bahrain Forum for Dialogue, East and West for Human Coexistence. Well, many Bahrainis find the theme slightly ironic when they feel that the government does not want its own people to peacefully coexist and thrive. Bahraini prisoners, as well as some of those in exile, have written letters to Pope Francis and informing him that Hamad simply wants to put on a show for the world that everything is fine in Bahrain and that he believes in inclusivity, when that is the farthest thing from reality in Bahrain today. Here's an excerpt from the prisoner's letter to the Pope.
Bahrain's prisoner's letter to the Pope. Your Holiness, Pope Francis, we speak to you on behalf of more than 4,000 political prisoners from the people of this island, imprisoned throughout the years since the events of the 2011 Arab Spring. Some of them served their sentences and were released without redress. Some died without compensation. Some were killed without any investigation. Some are awaiting execution without any intercession, while others will never be freed. Sentenced to life, after being handed down ridiculously long prison terms. Abdul Rauf Al-Shaib. Dr. Abdul Rauf Al-Shaib has been a human rights defender for more than 40 years. In 2006, Al-Shaib founded Bahrain Salvation Movement, Harakat Khalas. He is currently the head of the National Committee for Martyrs and Victims of Torture in Bahrain. Stripped of his citizenship, Al-Shaib has been sentenced to death. He's also been sentenced to prison in absentia for more than 130 years.
Well, thanks so much for being with me. We're happy to have with us here in the studio Dr. Abdul Rauf Al-Shaib. I'm so happy you being with us. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Let's start from there.
Yeah. When I was still young, between 14 to 15 years old, I start feeling that there is a discrimination in Bahrain against majority of people there, which is Shia. And also by the revolution of Iran, we start having some idea that there is a political religion where we can use a religion to apply a government or to have an Islamic rule. So that's why we start having that knowledge and we start doing some practice and activity, pushing people for Islam back to go to Islam. From that years, I have been in prison with the government only because we were supporting Islamic ideology and idea about the government. So they put me for 5 years in jail. Again, after that, also again for 5 years, until means I have spent between Saudi Arabia imprisonment and Bahrain imprisonment and UK as well imprisonment for more than 18 years.
Oh my God!
Only for my activities defending human rights means...
So you said that, okay, so Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, doing human rights activities, you're in prison. But what happened in UK? Why were you in prison there too?
The same things means I feel that there is some pressure on UK government from Saudi Arabia and from Bahrain because of my activity. So they fabricate for me a case about a media that there is some information in your laptop that can support who were planning to attend a terrorism act, which is all fake, all means the judgment about your heart, about your soul, that you might have that plan in the future. So we put you in prison for that.
Tell me your perspective right now. What is life like for the Bahraini people today?
I feel since Al-Khalifa, they came on stage to rule Bahrain, it's still the same, but it goes worse and worse by the time. Means, let's say the father of this king in Bahrain right now was a little bit better than him, and his grandfather better than his father. So the more we are going for the generation down, the more they get worse. It means they become more dictatorship. They become more oppression against and aggressive against our nation there in Bahrain. So there is a very wide discrimination against the people in Bahrain. They use them like slaves. And that's why we don't have our right. That's why we stand to ask people's support, that we have to get our independence from this government and to rule ourselves by the means constitution we have.
We have seen recently the situation with the Bahraini government establishing ties with the Israeli regime. I want to talk about that and the effect on the Bahraini people. Do the majority of Bahrainis support this move, or how do you see this?
Absolutely not. Means the majority of Bahrainian people, whether they are Sunni or Shia, nobody supporting the government for normalization with Zionist regime. Everybody hate this regime because it's come as like a cancer in our Islamic body. So we have to get rid of the Zionist regime. But the government, although they say that we have an election, although they say we have a parliament, without asking the parliament, without having their their opinion, they are only a toys there. They put them. Nobody can even talk about Israel or about Zionist.
You just talked about the parliament, and we know that the regime has the elections coming up on November the 12th. What's your perspective about these elections?
You know, the election process itself, it doesn't give any sign or any meaning that if you have election means you have a democracy process of procedure. No, even if we will see Hitler itself, who is bloody shit, he have that time also elections. Saddam Hussein, he was having some elections. Many of countries, a dictatorship country, who they imprisoned their people, they use election, but...
So you're saying the elections are not real?
It's fake. It's fake, exactly. It's not real election. Means that there is many expect that we can prove that this election doesn't represent a vote of Bahrainian people. That's why they came with that election. They use it as a makeup. The election, they use it as a makeup to beauty the ugly face of this dictatorship government.
Your final words. We know that there's an international conference that King Hamad is sponsoring that's coming up in November, and even the Pope is supposed to be there and other people. What would be your message to those individuals going to Bahrain for this conference?
First, my message for the Pope itself, because he is the top of this group who's coming in Bahrain, and he should know that by his visit to Bahrain, he is, if he mean or he doesn't mean, he is going to support this dictatorship government against his nation. And that's not the message of the Catholic Vatican. It's not the message. They said we are following the Christian and we are following Jesus. Jesus will not agree to be against one person in this world. How about nation or how about a country full of people? So that will not be acceptable. He is representing today the Pope. He is representing Jesus. And we don't believe that if Jesus was in this world, will visit Bahrain by even the call of his ruling government.
Right. Well, I would love to continue talking to you, but we're out of time. I appreciate you so much for being with us here on Hidden Files.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Stay with us. I'll be right back with more of the show. As there are growing calls from Bahrainis for external pressure to be applied on the regime, the Al Khalifa family continue to work towards trying to show that everything is normal inside of the country. The regime's Western allies seem to continue to turn a blind eye to the oppression that is taking place. This is despite the United States having its fifth fleet stationed in Bahrain. So the Americans are quite aware of what is happening on the island nation. And of course, with both the United States and the United Kingdom, what we have seen is continued support for the regime and increased weapon sales to facilitate Hamad and company with its iron fist policy. And then there's Israel, and that the regime has normalized ties with the Israelis, despite the majority of Bahrainis being against the normalization of ties. Now, there's Saudi Arabia, which continues to support the regime and wants to help it change the demography of the small island nation so that the voices that may still be heard may become even more stifled. Well, perhaps participants in the upcoming conference being held in Bahrain, according to some in exile, to whitewash the reality on the ground, can serve as a forum for those who really want the truth to demand accountability. How about a visit with political prisoners to see their overall conditions? How about demanding that before Hamad reaches out to the East and the West, he reaches out to his own people and allow them to have fair representation and participation in the society? How about releasing political prisoners? How about reinstating the citizenship of so many people? How about letting the Bahraini people breathe? One person, one vote, and then watch how Bahrain could flourish if the people were given a chance to choose its own course. Well, we're hoping that eventually that will be the case, and we're keeping our eyes on Bahrain, and we're bringing you all the latest on this continued demand to end the oppression in this country. Well, that brings us to the end of this edition of Hidden Files. Make sure you join us next week and see where our files will take us to. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines. Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says the enemies failed in their plots to cause disruption in the country because of miscalculations about the recent developments. Palestinians hold the funeral of a 41-year-old man who was killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank.